Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Javier, we got, I think, did my eyes deceive me, a semi-clean finish in a WWE main event type match on television?
Yeah, I was seeing the same thing, that fairly clean throughout, with pretty much one major exception and one that it didn't go the heel's way, and of course that was Theory.
Yeah, but even, I mean, just to have a main event match where you're like, I'm not shocked that they had Priest lose, because I think there's sort of a hierarchy of who you can imagine losing against whom clean. And I think Priest falls in line with someone that they would have lose clean to somebody of Riddle's stature. So I wasn't surprised when it happened in that respect, but I was pleased that it did, because I've been making the case the last couple of weeks that WWE should be looking for any opportunity where they can do a clean finish and it won't, like, hurt anybody too badly in their mind. You know, like, anything that they can possibly book in terms of a clean win, they've got to do it. Because, again, every situation they can make their case and try to justify it, you know, individually. But collectively, it's just too high a percentage. And, you know, we saw that in other cases tonight, but it's been the trend. So, anyway, since I've been talking about that the last couple of weeks, I wanted to lead with that. I think it is a problem. I think fans are going to get conditioned to not buy into the drama of near falls until there is a finish, until there is interference. Anytime that there's a match where it seems like you can't imagine one person winning or losing. You know, they're training viewers for that, and they've got to start breaking away from it. Again, I think this was an easy call in the main event for them, a relatively easy call among, you know, two main eventers, but it's time to do it more often in other cases too.
Well, yeah, I mean, going into every single match, there was a reason for an interference. So
I know, yeah.
Yeah, so I was just waiting, and I think that might be why it felt it was, it, you know, once we go over the show, I'm pretty sure I may be wrong, but it felt it wasn't as bad, because every single match that was booked for the show seemed like they had a good, quote-unquote, good reason for there to be an escape hatch. And considering the fact they didn't take all of them, I think kind of what led to make me feel better about the show.
We can go over the finishes. But yeah, I mean, we had Rhea Ripley interfering against Rey, for instance. Theory interfering, but it didn't lead directly to the finish. But so that was better. Omos won clean. Amazing. Candice LeRae won clean, but that was no surprise. And the Solo Sikoa interfered against Styles leading to the finish. So there was interference there to, quote, protect Styles. And then we had finally the, you know, a clean match, a clean finish in the more competitive matchup between Riddle and Priest. So, yeah, there's still work to do, but this was a step in the right direction. But really, you know, the matches that ended clean – or, you know, like, you expect Belair to beat Io Sky clean. I mean, that's, you know, because Sky's at a level beneath Belair. So, yeah. Anyway, it deserves some attention at the top of the show. What do you think of the show overall, Javier? I mean, obviously, WWE is going against Monday Night Football in a big matchup with the Giants and Cowboys, close enough and competitive game that it probably did pull some viewers, although if it just leads to surges in viewership like SmackDown last Friday, WWE might take the trade-off. Not that USA wants the trade-off, but Fox is happy, and WWE overall is going to be okay if a lot of people who are not watching Raw because of Monday Night Football just jump over and start watching SmackDown.
Well, I thought it was good. It was a nice, pleasurable experience. Almost worth the 3 hours. because I mean, it doesn't drag on like it used to, and it continues to be the same. I don't think there's anything that, like, specifically, like, if I weren't already watching it, I wouldn't, or you know, I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it. Because there's nothing, like, you know, at least Reigns is over on SmackDown. That's, you know, higher level, but it's, you know, if I'm already watching it or if I'm like already interested or if I'm, you know, I'm a mild fan of wrestling, you know, it's a good watch. I don't think it's going to draw anything from like, you know, oh, you got to watch this kind of thing, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I still am higher on the Paul Levesque booking than the Vince McMahon booking. And I think this was a steady show with developments for the pay-per-view, another surprise appearance of Candice LeRae, a little development with the QR code, and the bunny and the hints that are going on there, which we'll talk to you about. You know, it was just a show. To me, Raw was a show where you could – it's a form of television entertainment where you can tune in and watch an hour here, an hour there, 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there, and not and get something out of any part of the show that you watch. And in that sense, it's good. I mean, I want people watching all 3 hours, but I think the wrestlers who they're putting on they're putting them in situations where they're having good matches, so you're rewarded with good wrestling, and there's enough strong personalities in conflict in each of the matches, even if the match is more a setup for something happening with the wrestlers who are facing each other, splitting off into their actual feuds, or say in the case of Alpha Academy and Gargano and Owens, kind of setting up some singles matches or a singles match next week. Everything sort of has a sense of purpose, and I think the right people are being pushed. And one of the things, kind of big picture things with Paul Levesque, is I just think top to bottom, when you look at Raw and SmackDown right now, I don't know if there's exceptions. Maybe there are and someone can point it out, but I think at least almost everyone, if not everyone, feels better off today than 3 months ago in terms of their characters. And that just leads to kind of a higher base level for the show, where you can put on a non-blockbuster show like tonight, but have good matches that are engaging. And if you don't watch the whole show, there aren't just dead spots where if you tune in for 45 minutes, you tuned into the dead spot.
Yeah, and even the people who haven't improved, the little bit little teases that, like, for example, Nikki, it looks like they're doing something with Nikki, because they're talking about how she's, you know, trying to do something and showing how, you know, desperation, and she took off the mask. So it looks like something is going on with that character. So at least you got that over on SmackDown. They, you know, they looks like they're riding the ship on Shotzi, who I think has something. I think she was like horribly, you know, miscast beforehand. You know, poor Lacey Evans, but, you know, we can't have everything.
Yep. Yep. I agree. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce ourselves, introduce the show, and then introduce callers, and we'll see what they have to say about tonight's episode. I have no idea what the primary topic of conversation will be amongst callers or emailers. So we'll see how it goes. Because again, I think that there were a lot of things that were kind of at a similar level interspersed throughout the show as they focused on next week's Raw and building up Extreme Rules. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, September 26, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, including the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, pwtorch.com, and an array of podcasts. I host this, the post show. Tomorrow, I'll be hosting the Wade Keller podcast. This is our red logo show. That'll be our blue logo show. So search Wade Keller in your podcast app to subscribe to both the post show feed and the regular podcast feed. Zach Haydorn will be joining me on the flagship as co-host tomorrow. And we'll talk WWE, Extreme Rules. We'll talk AEW, of course, and more. Get your questions in early. We'll be recording early afternoon tomorrow, so if you want to be part of the mailbag segment on the flagship, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. You can also email this show if you're live streaming it and give us your thoughts on Raw. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Same email address, and we'll be checking that inbox in a few minutes for your thoughts and questions on Raw. The other voice you hear on the show is Javier Machado. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, a PWTorch VIP podcaster, and you hear him call in on this show for our special roundtable segments periodically, more than periodically, and it's great to have you here for the full show, Javier.
Always happy to join you and talk to callers.
Excellent. Well, did I get my phone number? No, I didn't. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. You can also email us, as I said, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. www.wadecalls.com. We welcome our regulars. We welcome first-time callers. Don't be scared. We invite people who haven't called in a while to decide to chime in and let us know what you think of not only this episode, but also the Paul Levesque, Triple H Paul Levesque era so far of WWE booking. All right, let's begin with a caller from Charlotte, North Carolina. This appears to be Justin. Welcome to the show, Justin. You're kicking things off. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
What's going on, fellas? I thought the show flowed well, at least for the first 2 hours. That third hour kind of dragged a little bit. I thought Sami Zayn and AJ Styles had a really good match, but I was kind of feeling the beginning of the third hour with that. But stuff made sense, except for Braun Strowman randomly calling, you know, Austin Theory's phone. And that, I guess that's they want to do something different to set that match up. That didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. But less interference than last week, a lot more clean finishes, good build. First thing I want to talk about, though, is Wade, you've been kind of on this Sami Zayn train for a while, and I'll admit I wasn't sold on it for the longest time. But after the segment on Friday, and for a crowd that really wasn't all that enthusiastic to me on television, was one more of the people on the show, and they could have a real big-time babyface on their hands with Sami Zayn. So what do you guys think about the follow-up to the big segment that everybody was talking about on Friday, and did they do just enough, or could they have done a little bit more?
Sammy is going to be a mega babyface in 2023, Javier, and I love that he's leaning so hard into the cockiness now that he's an honorary Oos. I really like the dynamic with Sammy being so over the top and Solo Sikoa being so stoic and intense. I think there's a good juxtaposition style chemistry between those two. I like that Solo Sikoa is loyal to Sammy, or I don't know if loyal is a word, but that he's on Sammy's side because he could have gone either way. You know, who knew when he had showed up? You think, who's this crazy guy who you guys are hanging out with? But instead, he seems somewhat fond of him for reasons we're not entirely sure of. And you know, as a sidebar to even Sammy, it's extending the use of the Bloodline, which is a top faction. I mean, Javier, now I'm diverting here. Is the Bloodline going to be a bigger faction than the Shield when all is said and done? Historically speaking, ranking them?
I am probably the one person to ask because I missed all of the Shield. So,
yeah.
I think it's a possibility, depending on how it ends, because that's the other thing. The Shield basically ended and set off at least two of the three members into, you know, other things. I'm expecting that when the Shield ends, I don't think we're, you know, Roman will just become a side attraction at that point. But what happens with the other people, so the Sikoa and the Usos and where they go on from there, I think that ultimately, I think, will determine it. I lean towards Bloodline in the future, but, you know, that's not really having followed much of the Shield. I don't know exactly how hot they were.
I think the Bloodline will go down as having better, being better storyline wise. I just think the way that they build that they tell stories with them, and you know, it remains to be seen what happens with Solo Sikoa, and if he takes over for Roman, if Roman leaves or ends up breaking away, or Solo Sikoa breaks. I mean, there's so many more things yet, aspects of it to still play out. But if it springs Sami Zayn as a breakout top babyface at that stage of his career, that's huge for, in terms of, you know, like a lot of times NFL coaches are judged based on how many assistant coaches go on to be successful head coaches for other teams. Like the Shield just didn't, they spawned each other, the three of them, but not really anything else. But the Bloodline is sort of this living faction that's doing other things. And we had the Jay and Jimmy dynamic, or the Jay dynamic at first, and now the Jay and Jimmy dynamic, where they're different personalities and distinct. I think there's more depth and overall compelling, intriguing stories that the Bloodline is telling compared to the Shield. And so I guess I'll put it this way. I'm a bigger fan of what the Bloodline is doing and has done as a faction than I was at any point in the Shield's run. And the Shield was really cool and really successful. So that's kind of my take. I know I kind of went off track there, but as far as Sami Zayn goes, Justin, I will accept you admitting that Sami is destined for even more greatness than you were estimating a month ago.
Yeah, a lot of it had to do with just the booking for the last 2 years. I understand he was a comedy guy and stuff like that and everything like that. But they're showing, WWE is showing, and you got to give a lot of credit to Paul Levesque, because around the Vince era, towards the end, the Bloodline stuff was starting to get a bit stale. So I do give credit to the direction they've went in, and they definitely turned it up. Because who knows, if Vince was in control, do we even know Solo Sikoa would even be in the Bloodline? Would he have got that call up? Had Vince been around, we really don't know. But they definitely stepped it up, for sure. So I'm interested to see where that goes, especially during WrestleMania season.
Well,
but
and Justin, before you switch to another topic, I want to get Javier's take on the Sami Zayn trajectory at this point.
Yeah, I think the important thing is it feels like character is – because character is important for any story. Character is basically – you know, you can't just drop him to the plot and then just, you know, get character from point A to point B. You have to be true to that character and how he gets there and how they do the reactions. And that I think that's what's been the strongest with Sami and the people around him, is basically everyone knows what their character is, and when they're put into position, they act accordingly. And they react accordingly. And, you know, so Sami Zayn, with his understanding of, you know, the character that he's playing, his facial reactions on Saturday, him kind of like feeling, you know, you could kind of see what he's thinking by how he's acting, because he's always been a coward, but here he is facing AJ Styles, knowing that he has Solo Sikoa's backup, but he also knows that he has to show out, because he's also aware that while he has a good thing with the Bloodline, he also can't embarrass the Bloodline. So there's like a little bit of like desperation there that he needs to be there. And all this is just stuff that you can get, you know, you can glean from what you're watching based on the characters, the way they think, how they're acting in the ring, how they're acting outside of the ring. And it really, you know, it creates for a good environment for storytelling. And in that environment, people can, you know, when you it helps invest you in the characters. And right now people are beginning to invest in Sami's journey. And at some point, someone's going to get angry with him. Solo Sikoa, I think, would end up on his side, because you mentioned you didn't know why Solo was with him. Sami saved him. And I think they kind of planted the seed that Solo, while on Reigns' side, also has like a level of honor.
Yeah,
to some degree. So, and you know, so almost like it'd be imprinted on Sami, at least for now. Cause I think Jimmy would sell out Sami, cause he's cool with Sami now, but if Roman says it, Jimmy will sell him out. Jay already hates him. And I think even Jay might end up having sympathy towards him, but I'm sure Jimmy's the sellout. Jay may have sympathy, and Solo might also be someone who has sympathy towards Sami, and that might be down the road what ends up the solution of the Bloodline over Sami.
I know. The more you talk about all the different dots that connect in different ways and where things might go, the way that they have planted seeds for things to go in certain directions, and then the anticipation of seeing it play out, and then the faith and the acting and the storytelling, that the credibility that's been built up in terms of how they pay that off. Not perfect, but the performances and the personality dynamic and the reward you get for watching carefully and listening carefully and maybe rewatching segments so you can pay attention to everything Sami does, and then pay attention to everything the Usos are doing, and then pay attention to Heyman and Reigns, of course, and now Solo Sikoa. It is going to be one of the better factions ever. I mean, I don't think that's a bold statement, but I just think it's starting to come into focus now too. Anyway, Justin, I'll throw back to you if you want to follow up on that or change topics or wrap up if you want.
Well, I could follow up. I had one more question though, but as far as the storyline, this is one of the best storylines they've told in years from a storyline perspective.
Yeah.
And you know, this Roman Reigns, long title reign, 2-year title reign, I feel like it's helping their business. WWE's business has been better post-WrestleMania. I think there's something about not combining the titles and just making somebody feel special. And I think that's what they've done with Roman Reigns. And it's bleeding through different things, the faction, Sami Zayn storyline. They still got Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens still lined up to face them. They can go in the direction with Bobby Lashley if they wanted to. There's still opponents lined up. You still got, to me, the ultimate story, Beyond the Rock, with Cody Rhodes. So they definitely have some other stories to tell, even with just Roman Reigns feuds. I know I skipped Logan Paul, but Wade, I know you're not a big fan of Mr. Paul, so I didn't want to bring him up.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I come down as not. I mean, I guess, but there's not like hostility. I'm just sort of against on principle. I'm getting a title shot, but I understand sometimes storyline integrity sacrifices are made for the sake of business or doing something novel, and that's certainly the case here. Javier, any thoughts on that or anything else Justin said?
No, I mean, I kind of agree with you on the Logan Paul, thing. It's for Saudi Arabia, and considering the fact that some people just don't watch it and doesn't even exist, something I don't think there's going to be too much. Also, a little bit of build towards it. I don't think there's going to be really any fallout after that. So, you know, it's draw some people, make the Saudi prince happy, and then we could just forget about it once we're on the other side.
I think part of, I guess, if I'm bad on what I'm irritated by beyond Logan just getting a title shot and sort of acting like that's okay. Like if somebody came up to me and just said, "Hey, here's the Nobel Peace Prize, Wade," I'd be like, "Well, wait, no. I mean, thank you, but I don't deserve this. There's other people who deserve it, you know." With all due respect to my job and in the way that I do it, I don't think I really qualify for this. And I think that should sort of be Logan's reaction. Like, what have I done to earn an opportunity at a title shot? So there's not really a humility or that comes from that. And then he's not only – and again, it's sort of weird to say, oh, don't hand me a winning lottery ticket even though I didn't buy one. I mean, that's sort of what he has here. So maybe you'd say, well, no, it's not up to him to say no to something if it's offered. Okay, fair enough. But he's sitting here storyline-wise trying to convince us he's got a chance against Roman – because he had this weird exhibition fight against Floyd Mayweather, his brother's taking on Anderson Silva, and oh yeah, there's pictures of me wearing an amateur wrestling singlet. This is my game. Like, the pitch from Logan is, I think I'm able to beat Roman. And it's just in the narrative structure of WWE, with all due respect, whatever that entails, to what Logan Paul has accomplished in social media, making a name for himself, selling these pay-per-views with these gimmick fights, in the WWE narrative, it's absurd that he's being presented as – I should say, it's absurd to expect fans to cheer Logan Paul if Logan is going to sit there and pitch that he thinks he can beat Roman Reigns in kind of the storyline, kayfabe, narrative sense that WWE presents its product in. And so it doesn't really fit, Javier.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally agree with you. This is for a fan of one.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, it'll do business. I bet more people tune in than would have for a Drew Reigns rematch or who knows, you know, whatever. Pick your other match. I mean, there's a novelty to it. I'm just saying, if Logan Paul wants to become popular, which he does, you know, he generally wants to win over the fans, he's not going to win over the fans by explaining why he has earned this spot and they should take him seriously in the WWE narrative as a challenger to Roman. And he has to understand they will resent him for getting a title shot. They'll resent him for main eventing as this social media celebrity. So in that sense, it's just sort of painful because he seems oblivious to that reality. And that's not to say that he's a bad guy in real life. You know, like I'm that's not my stance. And it's not to say he's not a hard worker with a good attitude, because I hear he is. So it really just comes down to, it's sort of painful to watch somebody try so hard for something that is just, and he's been good in the ring so far, but he just got handed a title shot and he's saying, because I wore a singlet and punched Mayweather, take me seriously as a Reigns opponent in the narrative that you guys are invested in. And I don't see it happening. I mean, Saudi Arabia fans might cheer Logan. I don't know. But in the United States, there's a big headwind, Javier, and I don't know how else they could do this, but this way isn't going to work.
Yeah, to be fair, he basically said, like, he's probably going to destroy me, but there's any given chance on any given Sunday kind of scenario for him, and that's what he's worried about, is that there's, you know, that there is a small chance that he might end up doing that. So, I mean, he isn't even selling himself in that respect. This is one of those where I kind of, like, you know, it should be just like I build it up for 3 weeks and then just do it and get out of the way. And best case scenario, it draws some new eyeballs that are just, like, you know, curious for the freak show, and the rest of the card impresses them. So.
But tonight he did show pictures of him as an amateur wrestler going, this is my game. You know, you can say, and I'm with you, he has said, you know, I'm going to get destroyed, but there's a chance. But he's also saying, this is my game. He's trying to tout that. And so that's where, again, it's sort of painful, because he's trying hard to explain to fans why they should take him seriously, even though he's also trying to play the humble card by going, well, I know, the odds of me actually, you know, beating Roman is small, but it's like, it feels like there's mixed messages depending on the setting of the week.
Yeah, and if he if they had set up more opponents for him, I think that would work better, so you could at least see some of what he can do. Because, I mean, he looked fine when the match with the Miz. Just, you know, do a little bit more of that, and, you know, I believe, you know, that almost felt more like he was talking, when he was talking about the amateur thing and stuff like that, he was talking more like, hey, I'm putting in the work, to the actual smart fans about it. You know, that almost felt more like it was an come on, you know, just give me a chance, man. Come on, give me a chance. I know you guys are not going to be into it, give me a chance. That kind of felt a little bit like a tone of desperation. You know, I mean, I'm hoping for the best, but, you know, brace yourselves.
Fans know he wants it really badly, and they know first of all, even if he didn't have a spotty record for his judgment as a social media star, with some of the decisions he's made, people can read about them if you're not familiar with his background. Even if he just was this, you know, cool guy who didn't do dumb things along his rise, it still comes across as he wants it so badly, and yet he's getting to main event a pay-per-view where people know he's getting he's probably getting a seven-figure payoff for this thing, or something close to it, because it's Saudi Arabia, and he's a celebrity, and they think he can make a difference. So, fans just aren't going to reward that, no matter how earnest he is about how hard he's working out in the ring. Because the answer fans have is, that's great, you're working hard. So did Kevin Owens, so did Sami Zayn. But you know what they did before they got main event matches on TV or on pay-per-view? They worked the indie circuit. They took long car rides. They put in not hard work from a few months here and there, but years and years of working off television in front of crowds of a few hundred. And don't act like working hard as a rich guy getting all these big celebrity matches handed to you puts you in the category of those people. So just, you're not going to talk people out of booing you.
Yeah, well,
even if they just think he might be a nice guy in real life, you know, and he might have matured into a cool dude. But in the WWE narrative, good luck, but the headwind is strong for it to work.
Yeah, because that's what I'm saying, that he, if he had a couple more matches to build stuff up, because, like, I think people would be much more cooler if, McAfee got into it with Reigns and then he got a shot. I think people would be much more cooler with that than they would with Logan Paul, where they haven't, like, really, you know, made you like him. I mean, just going up against The Miz, and remember when the first time they had Miz got cheered for doing his finisher on Logan Paul the first time around, so... You know, it's definitely going to be a thing.
And I just don't think having Logan work his way up in a few more matches works. I think Logan going to NXT and becoming a wrestler is the way he would get cheered. The problem is that's not smart, because then he becomes just a wrestler and not a celebrity. So I get the business side of it. I'm just saying, I don't know that him working a couple more matches and working his way up to Roman is going to stop the pushback, you know, no matter what, if he gets a main event match against Roman. And that's fine. Just accept it. But just, it's painful to watch him try so hard to fight the reality of fans not cheering him, even though in his mind he's a good guy who works hard and loves wrestling and wants to win them over. I just don't think it's gonna happen. Justin, anything else before we move on to our other callers in line here?
Yeah, last thing I want to touch on before I go. I was watching that opening segment with Bayley and Bianca Belair, and it just struck me a little bit that I don't, you know, they got the ladder match at Extreme Rules, but it's like I don't even really know what would be the best direction for them to go in, because on one side, this damage control thing still to me isn't working, and on the Bianca Belair side, we know she's a star, we know she's talented, but it's like, where do you even go from here from a storyline perspective, opponent? It's not like they got a bunch of heels lined up for her to face after this title defense. And I don't really know what direction they were going. It just feels either it's going to be stale if they keep it on Bianca, but then why reward damage control when it's not really working? So I don't really – we still got a week from Saturday before we get to the pay-per-view, but – I just feel that main event women's division right now is just kind of stale in the point of interest. What you guys think about that? It's my last question.
Sure, thanks. Javier?
Yeah, I mean, my problem with damage control, and it really was underscored today with them having, you know, the tete-a-tete they were having, that it felt like they were just talking around in circles. They didn't say anything new. None of them really feel comfortable in their characters. Like I was mentioning, you know, with the whole Bloodline storyline, that everybody knows who their characters are. Feels like nobody there knows who they are. I don't know who Dakota Kai is. I don't know who Io Shirai is. You know, I don't know who Asuka is, because, you know, they never really have ever established her except for someone who likes to dance. You got Bliss sitting there, you know, like a girl holding her puppet, and Bayley's just, you know, going through the heel, you know, ding dong, you know, falling back on that, and now you have Belair falling back on the you know, thing. So yeah, the entire thing's not really been. I mean, considering the talent that's there, it's just a shame that's not really working. I don't know in terms of. I mean, they have plenty of women. Wrestlers now that it's looks like it's been, you know, it's you have a lot of different ways you can go, yeah, I'm trying to think who the heel. I mean, I could see maybe Io or Dakota or one of them, or maybe when they repackage Nikki, maybe something with that. Maybe if while repackaging Nikki, they repackage Doudrop also. Maybe that could be a direction they go. But yeah, it's been kind of. Disappointing this run so far.
I'm starting to be a bit down on Belair's centerpiece. The idea that it's destiny, that she's going to be a defining star of her generation as a centerpiece act, because as you touched on the girl thing, it just things are so. It's just she's falling back on. I was hoping under Paul Levesque that she would grow. And that she wouldn't be falling back on some of those lines and would be more real, just more relatable. And it's frustrating because not everybody can do that. Like, I'm not sure – I'm not advocating Otis become more relatable and more well-rounded. Like, but – although maybe he's got it in him. But Belair does. You know, she could be – she would be a bigger star if she could find a groove that felt like she was talking more like a human being and less like a pro wrestling caricature with, you know, little catchphrases and mannerisms. And so I'm not saying time is running out, but I have less confidence now that she's doing the same thing under Levesque that it's going to happen, whether it means I've overestimated her ability to kind of break out from that, or if it's just frustration that maybe she wants to and can, but Levesque isn't prioritizing directing her and the producers to make sure that happens, but it's not red hot. What do you think of the way they presented the debut of Candace tonight, Javier?
I loved seeing Nikki's reaction. It almost seemed like they didn't smarten her up and they say, hey, look, go out there. It's just going to be your chance to shine, you know, and see what you can do. And then she came up like, nope, this is not. yeah, this is not my time to shine. Yeah, I mean, I thought they did a I wasn't expecting it. I think they did a pretty well job, you know, pretty good job. Just, you know, came out there, pretty much squashed Nikki and then walked out. And quick introduction. This felt more like a prelude. I mean, sort of like what they did with Johnny Gargano. He came out, did something, and then, you know, we got more of it as time went on. So they gave us a brief Excalibur-esque Cliff Notes version of who she was. And I'm assuming we will follow up a little bit more. And I think they did a smart job having her interact with the three main women baby faces on the roster, so that if there were any doubts, you knew exactly what's going on. And I found it interesting that she immediately went into a thing with Bayley. So I'm thinking that might end up, after Bayley ends up losing to Bianca, that that might end up just spinning off to something with Candice, and since I do think that Bliss is going to likely be involved in the Bray Wyatt stuff, she might end up being Bliss's replacement in that group.
All right, Justin, I appreciate the call.
No problem at all. I'm staying on listening to the show, but appreciate you guys taking my call.
Sure thing. Thanks for kicking things off. Our number is 347-215-8558. Give us a call. Push 1 on your keypad if you call, if you want to be on the show. That's 347-215-8558 and push 1. All right, we'll go next to air code 707. 707, thanks for calling. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, guys. This is Tim from Sonoma, California.
Hey, Tim. Great to hear from you. What's on your mind about Rod tonight?
Yeah, you too. I'm glad to be on the show. First-time caller, but long-time emailer. I thought the show was pretty good overall. I liked pretty much the whole thing from top to bottom. But I wanted to talk about Kevin Owens and his match. First off, just want to get your thoughts on the match overall.
Which match?
Oh, the Kevin Owens, Gargano, and Alpha Academy match.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was a nice mix of different styles. So I thought it was cool when KO and Otis were battling it out as kind of the two bigger guys. And then obviously Gable and Gargano we've already seen, and that's always going to be good. But I like the cross-matching also. You know, Gable and Otis is going to be good, but also Otis and Gargano. Yeah, I commented in my report at pwtorch.com that it was a good high-energy match, but a good mix of styles, and it felt like the exchanges – and the sequences were novel and credible, and it actually could have – I would not have had a problem if this match was 5 minutes longer and was the longest match of the night. Javier, how about you?
Yeah, I really like this match. Going into it was the one I was we were talking about the distraction finishes. This was the only one that I completely haven't forgotten about Austin Theory. Sorry, Austin. Okay. That I thought it was going to be like – you know, mostly clean until I realized, you know, who was involved. But yeah, this I think was the one I was most invested in. And it felt like the playbook on this one was open up a lot more. And like you said, it's just like there were like basically four really different style guys in there. And it really worked. I really enjoyed that the hot tag that Gargano did, where he did that kick to get away from Gable to make the hot tag. And I thought that was like, you know, I've seen it on NXT, but I thought that was creative. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I mean, Alpha Academy keeps putting. I know they're kind of like the jobber joke ones, but they keep putting on. Dope matches after dope matches after dope matches. So,
yep.
And you know, people are gonna start taking them seriously. So,
and even if they don't take them seriously, they're going to want to watch them, you know, and that's an okay category to be in too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Tim, back to you. What'd you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought it was a really good match. I agree. I like the kind of difference in styles. I don't know if they're going to continue with the Gargano-Owens pairing, but I really like their chemistry, especially for what I believe to be a first-time team. I mean, I don't know. I didn't really watch them on the indies. So I was also really glad that the Theory distraction didn't lead to the finish, because I know it's been kind of a common complaint that that's been happening a lot. So I was glad for that. Kind of branching off that topic, I wanted to see what you guys think about Kevin Owens right now, because he's really on a roll. But I just don't know where he goes from here. I don't think he should be the one to beat Reigns, even though I think that program would be a lot of fun. And I think he could use a title just to increase his credibility, but a face-to-face match with Lashley could be kind of awkward.
Yeah. I don't know if we're going to get some sort of, you know, roster shakeup and where that could lead. I mean, I'm fine with, I ultimately am fine with KO not being in the top tier, but, or, you know, being at the bottom of the top tier, top of the second tier in terms of what, wherever that kind of arbitrary breakpoint is. And as long as he's being featured in a way that takes advantage of what he's really good at. And I just think that's been happening for a couple of months. And so, I hate to relegate KO to being a role player, but he, you know, because he's someone if they need him, if there's injuries or he just gets hot, the crowds are reacting and it's just undeniable and they got to go, you know, go with him at the top. Great. He can do that. But I'm okay with him just having good long TV matches, mic time, and mixing with different partners and opponents and just being a really valuable part of the show and a reason that you would want to tune in to WWE television. I guess it doesn't just feel like a consolation prize. It feels like just a good, solid use of who he is at this point in his career. And I'm not quite sure who to compare him to, but maybe at times where Chris Jericho was. And if that's the case, then, you know, maybe he can follow up the pattern and still have a main event run in him. To me, being protected and featured with his really shining both on the mic and in the ring and being a consistent TV character who's framed and presented as a big deal, it might take a year and a half of doing that to wipe away some of the start and stop inconsistency and defining doubt of his character from the past, you know, 5+ years. And maybe then you can kind of look at, okay, now it's time for him to actually become a top tier guy. But that will also depend on the lay of the land and who else rises through the ranks. Javier, what do you think? It's an interesting question in terms of how to best utilize them, because right now I'm happy with them, but I can understand some people going, let's get a belt around him and you know, and build one of the shows around him a little bit more as a single star.
Ultimately, if you look at Levesque's plans for WrestleMania in pencil, he has Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens versus the Usos for the titles.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you plot the storyline, the idea of Kevin Owens being the true friend that saves Sammy, that feels like it's the is the ultimate like emotional moment that people are gonna, you know, seeing them reunite. But I think it's the ultimate moment.
Is it too late for KO to be like a top tier centerpiece, lead, babyface or heel? I guess a year and a half from now on either Raw or SmackDown.
I think he's a guy that you could put into the mix. And you know what? Mankind. I put him like similar to Mankind. Wrestle a lot of the top guys. Maybe, depending on what the lay of the line the lay of the land is, gets a attaboy title run kind of thing. But I think Mankind.
All right. Tim, anything else for us?
Yeah, I totally agree on your analysis. I think that's a good trajectory for him. I wanted to move on to AJ Styles. You guys kind of touched on Sami Zayn in with the last caller, but I wanted to touch on him. It's I think it's really nice that Paul Levesque seems to be having a trend of kind of giving wrestlers breaks here and there. You know, we haven't seen AJ on TV in a few weeks. I think even though we see Sammy every week, he hasn't wrestled in a few weeks. So I kind of like that, but I wanted to also touch on kind of rumors and house shows are showing that AJ might be Roman's next opponent. So kind of a question, say he is the opponent for Roman Reigns going into fall. Do you think it's better for Roman to be involved in like a big singles match at Survivor Series or in War Games? Which do you think is like a bigger match?
Yeah, here. You can talk to that.
Man, if you're doing War Games, you got to put the whole bloodline in there. And I could see the team that goes up against them being headed by Styles, and then but you know that just being part of eventually you know a Styles Reigns match because I could see Styles being a credible opponent if Hunter wants him you know thinks that you know that highly of him because you know to be honest Styles is my favorite wrestler so. I may be a little bit biased there, but I think there's a because the ones I could see having problems with Roman Reigns, I don't think any of them are going to win. I could see Styles doing it. Highest I think is Kevin Owens. I think is the one that's most likely because I think that you'll get a program with Roman Reigns between and Kevin Owens first, and then that lead to the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens and ending up teaming up together.
Styles. Not that anyone was going to buy – I don't think many people were buying that he was going to join the Judgment Day because he was getting beat up and then they, you know, Finn stopped the stomp and said, you get another chance. But boy, did Styles sell it convincingly. Like, his acting, if there was anyone to be swayed into thinking AJ might join them, the way he paused and kind of his facial expressions in through subtleties just conveyed – maybe if I can't beat him, I got to join him. And I didn't, 15 years ago, I went to said AJ would be one of the better actors, more subtle actors. Not that it was anything against him. I just, it wasn't the thing that he was known for in TNA and in the bulk of his career. And now I just think he just gets it. And I understand if they want to put him against Roman and have him be a team captain and why just unexpectedly Vince McMahon kind of fell in love with him or at least really respected him and leaned on him a lot. And obviously that continues with Paul Levesque. He's just so good. He's good in the ring, but he's just turned out to be a much better actor in the ways that pro wrestling calls for acting. And I thought tonight was another example. And I thought it was cool to, you know, raise his finger up like he's going to, you know, accept Finn's gesture and then turn it into a middle finger. I think it was satisfying and it was well-timed. And so, yeah, just some praise to AJ as an overall performer. Tim. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that one of my favorite things is when a wrestler spits in the face of inevitability because he knew he was going to get, you know, beat up. And just that you know, if you're going to beat me up, at least I'm going to get a little bit out of it.
Yes, yep. Go ahead, Tim.
Totally agree. I love that segment with the Judgment Day. I'm really curious to see where it goes. And I have nothing but praise for AJ. He's been my favorite wrestler for a long time. I'm totally with Javier there. I had one more topic, kind of another bigger picture thing. I've been a really big fan of Paul Levesque taking over. I honestly didn't even watch Raw or SmackDown for the last like 3 or 4 years. I've just been keeping up with reports. And when I heard that he was taking over, that's when I started watching again. But I was curious if you guys have any news on how he's taking care of himself. I know that was a big concern when he was running NXT that you had said that he was kind of always doing energy drinks and not getting a ton of sleep and just really overworking himself. And that might've been what led partially to his whatever happened with his heart. So I just wanted to see if you guys have any thoughts on that or any news on that.
You know, I haven't heard, but I'll ask, cause it is a absolute fair, concern to have given what he has been through recently. I think based on what he's said, and, you know, having, you know, kids who are still, you know, at home, and how close he came to death, and he's been upfront about that, I hope and I expect that he is being careful and that Stephanie's making sure he's being careful. And certainly just overall, there's hopefully people looking out for him to make sure that he has the support he needs to not be overworked. But that's something I can ask around about. It has been long enough that, you know, if there was going to be a sense of wear and tear and people being concerned for him, you know, that would start to show up now, you know, like people going, God, this is a lot to throw on his plate and I'm worried for him. I haven't heard that from anybody, but I haven't also specifically asked. So yeah, hopefully the support group is there, and he's not expected to work the same hours as Vince McMahon demanded of himself.
And to ask a question, since you know them better, he is the type to delegate, because I don't think Vince is.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yep. All right. Good question. Tim and I'll do my best to follow up on that too.
Yeah. Totally appreciate it. That's all I had though. So thanks for taking the call.
Cool. Thanks, Tim. Call again. Good to hear from you. Good to have you back.
Yeah. Thanks.
You bet. All right. The next person I was going to just dropped off. So after that comes David in Farmington, New York. David, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hi, Wade. Hi, Javier. How are you doing?
How's it going?
Good.
I thought it was a really good show. I liked the flow of it. I thought there was a lot of good storyline advancement. One thing, though, Wade, I don't see how you can possibly criticize Logan Paul on his promo when he had such a strong go-home point, like, I'm not the head of the table. I am the table. That was ridiculous. I had to mention that. But now that aside, I thought they had a couple of good standout matches. Ray versus Seth was really good, although I am disappointed that Ray didn't mention that he wanted to exact revenge for Seth plucking his eyeball out here a couple of years ago. I'm kidding about that, too. But the last match with Riddle and Priest, really, really good action. I got to echo my previous remarks from a week or two ago about what you were saying about the factions there. It's like Bayley and Friends versus Bianca and Friends. Just like Javier said, there's just no, it seems like Asuka and Alexa and Dakota and, just kind of background players at this point. They have to do something better with them. But Dominic, oh my gosh, Dominic, when he walked out there, he is so much better. He's already got the heel swagger. He's chewing his gum. He's got the look. You can tell he's enjoying it. And that part was great. The only part I really kind of take issue with, and it might be nitpicking, but just because he's a new heel, just, like 2-3 weeks ago. Just because he's a heel, that doesn't really, I don't really like the idea of him just buddying up and fist bumping Rollins. He can be out there to distract Ray or what have you and do that, but that doesn't necessarily mean, he has to be all these guys are my friends now because they weren't before. That might be nitpicking, but, it's just a minor thing. What's your take on that?
Javier, what do you think?
I actually loved it because it felt like both of them were being so fake, both Seth Rollins and Dominic. They were being so fake and like, we're going to be doing, look, hey, I like you. It just felt like at any moment that they wouldn't be surprised if one turned on the other pretty much. So I kind of like dug that little, I don't know that I don't want to say sexual energy, but like this heel energy between the two. But yeah,
are you starting rumors?
But yeah, I dug the thing because remember because that was the thing. Dominic was also involved in the whole eye plucking incident. And it was like, and then Seth is like the type of guy because again he's one that knows his character. I know. You're going to complain about what that character is, but he knows the character that he's playing. So when he sees this guy, I have someone who has my back this match, just that smile that he gave. Mm-hmm. It was just such a I enjoyed it.
What do you think of the Dominic's useless chant?
Oh, that was fun too. Was because, people were already starting to turn on him and
what do you mean by that? Like Logan Paul go away heat or just genuine heel heat?
Yeah. Like you start getting that go away heat and then you turn the guy heel and then you, it, it, since the people, because, you know, obviously it's not like everybody in the audience is going to give you the go ahead way heat at first. It's something that builds, which is why when you start getting in that position, you want to switch you want to be ahead of the crowd and then switch them, because then like the rest of the crowd just goes with it thinking that, you know, you're essentially using the people who are like booing you because of go away heat. You're using them as your impetus to get everybody else to boo the character. So, you know, so then that's when you get like this overwhelming boo, you know, and I think that was like, you know, not to talk too much about AEW, but the MGF situations, I think there are people who legitimately did not like him, who led the boos, and then it's the people who are like, oh, I like the character, but I'm going to boo him because everybody else is booing him. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of like what's happening with Dominic. And the Edmonton was a little bit weird. The audience was a little bit weird because it felt like they were a little bit off. Mm-hmm. But like the previous week, you could tell the crowd was like, you know, really enjoying booing, just like not letting him talk. So.
Yeah. Yep.
And Boo Rhea Ripley because I don't think I was on the call last week. Boo Rhea Ripley for stopping that too. That was just bad choice.
Go ahead, David. Any follow up to any of that?
Yeah, just a few minor things. I don't know where they're going with Miz and Dexter and Loomis, and I really don't care because I'm really getting a kick out of it. It's so much fun to watch every week. It's creepy, but it's like fun creepy. And they also, moving on to, you know, someone mentioned Braun Strowman earlier. They have to be really careful with Braun Strowman. The world is not clamoring for a Braun Strowman-Otis matchup, or for that matter, Braun Strowman-Omos or anything like that. They have to be really careful for him not to fall back into – I mean, to me, honestly, it already feels like he's never left. And they just have to be really careful with how they book him to where he does not get old and stale again. And this has a small point, and again, this may seem nitpicky, but going to the Styles match, Styles and Sammy, first of all, you can't get enough. Sammy's like garlic in an Italian dish. There's no such thing as too much Sammy. He is just great in everything that he does. If you saw Sammy on Steve Austin's show there on Peacock, that you can tell that's him. He's got that natural exuberance and that energy. That's just him turned up, you know, 10 notches. And Sammy's great, but one little nitpicking thing, I know this is small, but I wish they would stop the floor to ring apron impact moves, because literally that Uranagi Styles fell from maybe 8 inches onto the ring apron. It really did not look that impressive enough for it to put him out. That's just me. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But the final thing with going on with AJ, I like the slow tease that they're doing with the Judgment Day. I think they would be, if they are going to pull the trigger on that, which I don't think, I think that might be a good thing for AJ. He's been kind of floundering lately, and I think that would be an interesting addition to Judgment Day. But if so, I don't think they need to pull the trigger immediately. Just keep it a slow burn. I don't want to see it happen at Extreme Rules. But what do you think that addition, what do you think he would be like as an addition to Judgment Day? Do you think that would be a positive thing for him and for the group?
So I think, first of all, Finn Balor's doing a good job making the pitch. I think it feels like what Finn Balor would say to recruit AJ. It doesn't feel unnatural to be making the pitch. It's smarmy, but it's what's baked in is Finn Balor believing AJ ultimately is willing to associate with, if not be smarmy also, based on the totality of his past and their past. And he's also thus, I think from a fan's perspective, in denial that AJ is in a different place now than Balor. And so I think they're working their history in well. Inherent in what I just said is I don't think fans would buy AJ turning heel and joining Judgment Day. I think it would work. I think it would be a bad decision. I think people think AJ is different than someone, he's different. He's in a different place, and he's different than a person who would associate or act act the way that, that Balor and Priest and Ripley and Dominic are acting. I think AJ's at a point where fans think he genuinely is above that and has or has grown out of that that phase of his character's outgrown or matured past that phase. So I don't think it would work, and I don't think they're going to do it. But the pitch Balor's making and Styles pretending, but obviously never really considering the offer, I think was well played tonight. So I was going to say one more thing about that. Well, anyway, Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, it did cross my mind that maybe AJ Styles would take him up the offer, but they're both alphas. They both can't exist. They can't coexist on the team. So I just felt that it would have been too quick for Judgment Day to already swap out another leader. Because that's the thing. It would kind of make sense for a storyline where, you know, he'll join them and then, you know, create a power struggle within the group. But it's too new of a group. The group really isn't like – I don't hate it, but it's not – and it's gotten a lot better since the early days. Now mm-hmm. that they're just basically acting like a, you know, semi-cult, semi-gang thing. So it's gotten better, but it's not like – it's not the bloodline. So it's not time to really like create that kind of internal strife because the two of them wouldn't be able to. They're both alphas. It's kind of like if you read Marvel Comics, they're more of a team up. If they're going to work together, they're going to work, you know, together as a tag. I don't think that they will be a faction, and then AJ Styles will, you know, follow Balor, and Balor's not going to follow AJ Styles. The thing is that I think Balor thinks, you know, based on their history, that he, you know, is like, why wouldn't he want to, you know, join Bullet Club?
Do you agree with me that Styles, that I think fans see Styles as outgrowing the temptation to be part of a group like that? Like that the journey they've been on with AJ, and I get that WWE's a place where Edge turned heel and then suddenly wasn't, and you know, and I mean, Kevin Owens, if you tried to explain somebody his character progress to somebody who's just catching up, just starting to watch WWE, it would be, you know, ridiculous. And so I'm not ruling out that they might, that in a general sense, WWE wouldn't do this type of thing. I hope under Paul Levesque, they do less of it or none of it, ideally. But if we're to have more faith in the integrity of characters, once Levesque sort of corrects course on people who he thinks he wants to get kind of quickly shoved into a better spot or a different spot, which I think we're sort of past now. I think we're through that kind of difficult initial switch, change over and transition. I just doesn't feel like it's not just that they're two alphas. It's also AJ's an alpha who is a good guy who's going to be a good guy for a while.
Yeah, my thinking would be that he would join the group and. I mean, if like you want to do that, he would join the group and take it over and also change it to his version of the group. So, you know, not obviously, you know, white meat baby face, because he could, you know, just slightly more like, you know, be more dickish, you know, like how he was with the Good Brothers, you know, that kind of thing, where he wasn't like, you know, pure like evil or anything. But yeah, so that's what I was thinking. That's what I'm saying. I thought it's too, you know, like too soon for that group. You're better off just dissolving the group if you don't think it's working. So then try to salvage it by putting AJ Styles in there.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Cool. David, back to you. Did we, I know you brought up a few points. I didn't take notes on it, but if there's anything else you want us to respond to, please remind me.
No, I tend to agree with you guys on AJ. You guys made some very good points. And with the recent addition of Dominic, I really don't think Judgment Day needs to grow. I mean, possibly in the future, but not at this point. And you know, they certainly don't need to turn into a you know, late era version of NWO where they're, you know, just the janitors now suddenly part of the group too. Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think AJ, he's had enough heel turns and, the stuff with the Good Brothers and all that stuff. I think he's better off where he is, but I do like the continuous tease, though. I think they should keep that up for a while. That's going really well with Balor's recruitment of him, and I'm enjoying seeing that, too. So thank you guys for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, David. Appreciate it. He brought up the moves from the floor onto the edge of the ring apron. and they're kind of selling that as a big deal because the edge of the ring apron is so hard. I mean, after watching Rampage on Friday, where it was like 2 hours of people taking unnecessary bumps that were needlessly dangerous, and I mean, it just felt like one thing after another. Where it's like, did you really need to do that? And if you're going to do it, be better at it. I don't feel like I'm really in the mood to criticize a somewhat safer looking move that where there's a little more control over things. At first, I thought he was saying just moves on the ring apron, but they have been doing that lately. You know, he slammed him while standing on the floor onto the edge of the ring apron. Part of me is just like, well, if they can sell it and frame it as it hurts because you're right there driving them onto the hard edge of the ring, it's, to me, I enjoy it more because it feels like a situation where there's more control and less of a chance of, you know, Juilliard completely missing a table like she did Friday and just landing neck and head first onto cement, overshooting even the, not only the table, but the ringside padding. And there's just multiple cases of stuff. I think Sammy Guevara is part of it. I can't remember the specifics, but I was just like, my God, stop it, people. It's just, oh, Sting, too, it was like doing stuff that he shouldn't be doing, I would say somewhat objectively, I think. But anyway, so yeah, I know we brought that up, Javier. Have you noticed that? Is that something that bothers you, or you kind of think they can make it work?
I mean, I have noticed that they've, like I've mentioned a few times, that it feels like they have opened up the playbook over in WWE, where it's not to NXT levels, but you know they have done more, and I think we're getting longer matches, but I think less. So I think people are going to be able to take time in between. But we'll see. We'll see what happens if injuries start piling up. And I'm talking particularly the WWE right now. Because the AEW, like that Rampage, I agree with that. That was and I also saw the Victory Road yesterday. So with the barbed wire everywhere. So that already kind of like shifted my Overton window of like violent matches. So I have to wait for it to shift back. So
yeah. Yep. Cool. All right. Well, let's keep rolling here. If you're listening to our live stream here, you're still invited to call us 347-215-8558. The phone lines are still open. Just push 1 when you call if you want to be on the show. We'll go next to Grant in Detroit, and then Brad in New York is on deck. Grant, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
So I was kind of in and out of Raw tonight. I'm going to have to go back and watch most of it on DVR. I've been kind of busy. But I did want to ask you a question. So I seen Candice LeRae debut, and I wasn't able to ask you. I caught it one of the weeks you weren't on the AEW post show. So I have a question. So you normally are really hard on AEW when it comes to them debuting all these new characters and not giving the backstory. So that's kind of been a thing since Triple H took over. We keep getting all these new debuts or re-debuts and not explaining who these people are. Like, it took them weeks to explain who Karrion Kross was. We didn't really get a backstory with Johnny Gargano. These are people like that the main roster audience, a lot of them not going to be familiar with. So what do you think, how can they do a better job of giving that backstory? Because, like I said, that's something you've been really hard on AEW about, not explaining who these people are.
It's fair to compare the two. And Candice LeRae showed up. Javier, did they talk about her NXT experience, or was it more – it was more general. Like, she's a world traveler, like Johnny Gargano and Kevin Owens. It's weird that she got brought in, and I'm trying to kind of calibrate or compute how it was different than AEW, because AEW, it's like, you know, Rush is a big deal, and he's great. With Candice, it was like this sort of more generic but frenzied attempt to get you to understand that she's a big deal and you should think she's a big deal. But it was treated like – the difference is they treated Candice like you shouldn't know who she is, and we're going to tell you, but we're going to kind of tell you in a way that suits our purposes. And in AEW, it's more like, well, of course you know who she is, of who he or she is. And if you don't, well, tough. Go look it up on the internet. Is that a fair comparison, Javier?
Yeah, like when Rouge comes out, oh man, look who it is. Yeah, I think so. In this case, yeah, they did give you like a cliff notes real quick. You're right. I don't think they mentioned NXT, but they did talk about that. You know, she's a big deal and stuff like that. The thing is that they do follow up. You know, they kind of did the same thing when Gargano first showed up, because I believe we even on one of these shows we mentioned that they debuted him there in where the audience would know, but us, you know, they didn't do enough to really explain who he was to the audience. But eventually, you know, they got around to it in the next next show, and that's fine, because you could do an introduction, create interest by, you know, she won a dominant match. They put her in with your top three women baby faces. So then when she shows up next week, we would hopefully get more of a mission statement, who she is, why she's there. Similar how Soraya, formerly known as Paige, showed up, and they just said, oh, look, it's you know, Soraya. And, like, she came out, and then supposedly we're going to get a mission statement on Wednesday in AEW. So hopefully we get a mission statement from her on next Monday, and you know what she's doing here, and similar to what Johnny Gargano did, and it was weird. It was also kind of weird because they like waited until like she everything was all done before they actually even hinted at the fact that she was married to Gargano.
Say that last part again. I got
it. It was weird because it seemed like they waited until like the end of like her introduction before they, because they called her, you know, Candice Wrestling. And that was like the only real thing that we got. I'm like, are they going to pretend that they're not married?
It's sort of like Becky and Seth. I think we're going to get a wink and nod. We're acknowledging it, but understand we're not going to explicitly lean into it as a thing.
Yeah, at least until Indy comes back.
Yes.
And I mean, the one thing is I hope they change her finisher, because both her and Gargano used a finisher, Gargano Escape. I kind of wish that they changed hers to Can't Escape, you know, so.
Yep. Cool. So, Grant, back to you.
I think like that might have been all I have for the night. Like I said, I missed a lot of Raw. I got to go back and watch it on my DVR. I'm just going to, you know, follow along with y'all coverage. So that's it for the night.
Yeah.
I'll give it y'all Wednesday.
Cool. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to Brad in New York next. Brad, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking the call. You know, on, well, thank you. sorry, I don't know. I just have to say that. You know, Bobby Lashley had a little backstage thing with Riddle. And he said, you know, he said, oh, by the way, Riddle, don't ever come up and show up at one of my matches while I'm doing my work in the ring ever again. You understand that? What do you think that was? Like, do you think that these two are going to have some sort of feud at some point? Do you think Bobby turns? Do you think that was? Cause I find it hard to believe that was nothing. You know, that line was said for no reason. What do you think comes of something like that? Or do you think it was just a line that was thrown in to show that Bobby doesn't need any help, and that's kind of where it came from?
Javier, I'm curious what you think about this, because I'm trying to think if there were another one or two instances where there were callbacks that weren't integral to the story being told this week, but felt sort of like a reward for paying attention, but even more so, just a way to integrate something that feels more like how human beings would act about the not-so-distant past. And so I didn't... My take on Lashley saying that wasn't, this is setting something up for later, as much as a new philosophy, which is if two people are going to coexist and be friendly, but there's this thing that happened where one character might object, that character on camera will bring it up. And so, I don't know, maybe they were in their mind planting a seed for something down the line. But I wish I could think right now what the other instance or two were where that happened. I'm like, oh, interesting. I think Vince would have forgotten that even happened, certainly wouldn't have, quote, wasted TV time addressing it. And to me, it just felt like, yeah, we've kind of got a I to dot, a T to cross, you know, to make this a more believable segment. Javier, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's more. This was more to build the Lashley character, that he is someone who not even necessarily doesn't need help to win, but just doesn't want interferences in his matches. More like, you know, he is a fighter and just, you know, stay out of my way. That's not to say that they can use it as a seed for the future. I don't think they're going to be going against each other in the near future. I mean, maybe if Riddle does end up losing, I hope not, but if Riddle loses against Seth Rollins in the pit, then, you know, maybe, or even if he wins, what's Riddle going to do next? If Riddle beats Seth Rollins, Riddle can then challenge for the US title and then, you know, set them off and maybe not do so much like a heel, but like, cause I don't think you want to turn Lashley heel, but I think you could have him more as a kind of like a tweener. I know that's a bad word, but, you know, as just, he's a fighter and then, you know, he's willing to fight, Riddle and just be a little bit darker about it, you know, a little bit more mean about it than smiley about it. So there it could be a seed, but I think right now it's mainly just to establish the fact of who, Lashley is. And I did like the segment because it's one of those that, you know, to show that the baby faces in the locker room like Riddle and hang around and either give him advice or hang around them. So that helps Riddle. Plus he's got Bobby Lashley on TV and hopefully he gets put into some sort of like real angle soon. Cause like the most recent stuff he's been doing has been basically just a Miz, Loomis angle. So hopefully he gets, you know, the spotlight considering the fact he's the US champion.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Brad, back to you. Yep.
No, I appreciate that answer. So that QR code, did you guys notice how quickly that QR code came on the screen when Dom was coming in with the chair? I mean, it was so quick that I'm shocked anyone even got it. Like, I had a lot of trouble even with my DVR, like rewinding and pausing at the exact point because – if it was a half second, I'd be surprised. Like, maybe it was a half second, and I don't even think it was a half second. I had to, like, search for it. I couldn't even, you know, get it to the point where I could pause it exactly to scan it.
I fell behind a little bit on the DVR because I was like, it took me a few tries to, like, pause, and then I finally got it, and then played the video, and then I had to play the video like three times to catch all the people who were in it with their little phrases, and then try to figure out what is. Javier, have you watched the video?
I actually missed the. I missed the. I knew that there was supposed to be something, and I figured it was going to be there because the previous one talked about patricide, so I figured whatever was going to happen during the Rey Mysterio or something with Dominic. So I was expecting it, but I mean I must have blinked the moment it appeared because I didn't see it.
That's all it took.
Right before you called me, I was actually fast forward and see if I could find it and start watching it. But then, you know, we started this. So I had a chance to watch it.
Yeah, it was a 16-second video clip, and it included Randy Orton, Steve Austin, Road Dogg, I think Papa Shango, Cody Rhodes, The Rock, Kurt Angle, Edge, El Snow, and some others who flashed so quickly I didn't catch it, and I didn't want to watch it a fourth and fifth time. With various words, like, being spliced that fed into a sentence, like, you did feed your head was sort of like a phrase that they pieced together with various words that were said. So, I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. And Javier, if you were not co-host, you could be researching this now. And then we could assign it to you and then you could do research while the show's going on and then either email or call in and let us know your thoughts.
Yeah.
There's an advantage to you joining late.
Yeah. Can't do that right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I am looking for it, but, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
And the URL of that thing was wwe.com/930-something, which I said 9:30. Yeah, I was just trying to like look into anything. 9:30 obviously is the next SmackDown. I don't know if that is anything. You could go on and on guessing about this stuff all day, so it's probably not even worth talking about it because who the hell knows, but whatever, regardless. Justin had brought up, you know, what's next for Bianca or something. I forget exactly the way he asked it, and you were talking about, you know, potential opponents for Bianca. And I was just thinking, you know, Rhea Ripley, you know, hasn't had a match in really since that injury. Now, do you think her being part of Judgment Day and only being like an outside interferer with no real contact or dangerous contact is a way to keep her away from competition while she's still either recovering or whatever's going on? Or do you think that it's literally she's just in this gimmick now and there's no place for her to have a match? Because I felt like I was really pretty excited, actually, for Rhea versus Bianca. I thought that was going to be a great matchup. And I'm just surprised, unless you guys think it's an injury-related thing and that's why she's not wrestling, that she hasn't had a match since, you know, June or whatever it was with before Money in the Bank, you know, when she was supposed to face Bianca. Wanted your thoughts on that. And, you know, but again, you know, with Damage Control, you know, to me, it was the worst part of it. I just do not like it. And something even more annoying, which I didn't even realize, is that it's not Damage Control. It's CTRL, like, control, like the key on the keyboard, which to me is like so lame. It's just so stupid. But I can't get too excited about Bayley and Bianca right now, and that's why I was thinking about Rhea Ripley as a possible opponent if Bayley does not pull this off and win, and this Damage Control becomes the new female bloodline. Which, ooh, boy, do I really hope that doesn't happen.
Javier, what your thoughts on any of that, including Damage Control and in the way that they spell it, which I have less of a problem with, which I don't know, maybe I'm surprising myself with that, but I think that's fine. Maybe it's because there's finally a good reason to capitalize letters in the name.
I mean, it's millennial as hell is what it feels like. They're not going to be able to use the actual full world control, likely in toys, because Damage Control is the name of not really a team, but it's an organization in Marvel Comics that is they clean up after superhero battles. They're the ones who actually, you know, put the city back together after it gets destroyed, and they're called Damage Control, and they're toys and stuff. So I would assume that if they were going to go with I was surprised when they called it that, just, you know, just on the surface, because they tend to really shy away from anything that is even remotely something that's copyrighted. And I would assume that they might be, well, you know, they could get away with calling the group Damage Control in a wrestling setting. I think once you move to toys, that might be a little bit more of a, you know, sticky wicket.
Rhea Ripley. Yeah, do you think it's an injury and like it's an actual injury protection thing? Or, yeah.
I mean, unless it's like a lower body injury, because she has been taking bumps. Particularly, she took a couple bumps in the Clash of the Castle, was it? I believe. You know, like and like, you know, hard ones to the barricade. So unless it's like a something along those lines, it could just be that they're saving her and, you know, protecting her, not having her to have matches and losing stuff, and just have her involved in this until she ends up being Bianca's next opponent, maybe. But we'll see. By the way, the QR code, the words are "Who killed the world? You did. Feed your head." And then the number 40701 flashed on the screen. That actually points at a zip code for a Southern Kentucky, with the largest town being Corbin, which makes me think that pay attention during anything that Corbin is doing on SmackDown.
Wow. Jesus. That
was
good.
Yeah. So that's, where the hell am I? That was actually a comic book. Where the hell am I? comicbook.com had that. So, had the information. I'm assuming that, you know, because of the largest town being Corbin, I'm assuming that means that Corbin's going to be it's going to be during that segment, kind of how patricide led to Dominic.
Wow, that is really good. really quick on Extreme Rules. I do like how this year all the Extreme Rules matches seem to be Extreme Rules, whether it's a ladder match or whether it's a fight pit match or whether it's an I Quit match now that we have with Edge. It just seems like, you know, that's the right way to do this pay-per-view, not like last year where you had literally one Extreme Rules match and that was basically what it was, you know? I just think that I think this is way better for that pay-per-view. You know, just on Seth very quickly, and you don't need to dive into super deep detail on this, but he is just so over. He is, I mean, the singing of the song, it's just gotten to a new level, like everywhere he goes, and crazy to me, like how excited everyone is by him. And do you think him and the Bloodline are going to have some sort of unfit? Like, do you think that's going to take like a year to play out, what we saw at Royal Rumble next year? Or do you think that Seth and the Bloodline thing happens like sooner rather than later, or relatively sooner rather than later? Or do you think that could be a story that just takes another year to get going? Like, I just want to see that happen.
Javier, I don't see it on the horizon. To me, it's that feels like something where Levesque, or, you know, predating him, I'm not even sure timeline-wise, where it's just like, throw that in because we'll get there eventually, but I'm not sure when. But keep talking about it, so it'll be a bigger deal when we get to it. But it's not on the planned horizon between now and Mania. What's your inclination, or what's your thinking?
Yeah, I don't see where it fits. is what I'm thinking. Cause, yeah, I think that they're dropping the hints, like, you know, hey, this would be cool. And we'll want to do that, but I'm not sure where it fits. So, you know, I don't know when, who's going to be, that's going to be the one to take it away, from him. Do they think they're going to get, Seth Rollins hot enough to be the guy, since Drew McIntyre apparently isn't, you know, if Cody's, you know, what about Cody? Cause I mean, it kind of seems like Cody would happen anytime before they could get to Seth and Roman, for the title. And I think that it should be for the title if you wanted to get it as at the best possible moment. But yeah, I think right now it's just more like seeding. Hey, we want to do this at some point. There are a lot, you know, so kind of like a throwaway line to see if a later author picks up. Let's see, you know, since I'm talking about comic books.
Yes.
You know, that you just that you brought up Cody, and this will be my last thing. Who do you guys think returns first out of these four? And Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, Becky Lynch, or Charlotte Flair?
Okay, so say those again.
Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, Cody Rhodes, Randy Orton.
And what's the question?
Just who do you think returns first out of those four?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. In any context, part of it depends on Orton's. What's going on with Orton? What do you think, Javier?
Yeah, I don't know what's the issue with Orton.
Yeah.
I mean, most likely just Charlotte would be the most likely.
Yeah. The most. Unless something else is going on, we haven't heard the most possible.
Yeah.
Because
I'm thinking that maybe she shows up on Raw to be Valera's next opponent. Maybe she's. I don't want to see her be Lee Liv's opponent.
Yeah.
Does Rousey win it, and then if she's Rousey's opponent, you know, assuming nothing, like you said, nothing else is going on. Yeah, I mean, that's a good question because. I don't know what the timeline of their injuries is. I have a feeling that come hell or high water, when's the Royal Rumble?
January.
January.
come hell.
Did
or
you really
high
ask
water.
That?
Yeah,
I mean,
I blanked out. I'm sorry. It's past midnight. I think come hell or high water, even if it's like, you know, with bailing tape and duct tape. Bailing wire and duct tape. I think Cody Rhodes is going to be at the Rumble. So,
Yeah. I wish I had a better answer on the timeline for Becky and Orton and Charlotte. So yeah, it's a bit of guesswork. And even Cody, I mean, there's plans and hopes, but I mean, there can be setbacks and I don't know, you know, I mean, injuries are, when they say, oh, it's going to be 9 months, they usually mean, you know, six. And if something goes wrong, then it'll be nine, but at least it won't seem like a setback. So, so we'll see. But it's a lot of talent that can spark things next year.
And then it's also, oh my gosh, you know, then having a space for a spot for them, you know, storyline for them. Because Bayley, you know, from what it looks like, and they kind of hinted at that in the promo today, that Bayley was ready as of WrestleMania, and they just didn't have anything until SummerSlam. So,
yeah.
Because I'm watching the show tonight, and I'm thinking there are so many people missing. You know, Becky's a glaring hole. Randy at times feels like a glaring hole, you know, and then, you know, even people like, you know, Rick Boogs, I can't wait for him to come back. There's a lot of people missing, you know, Big E. I mean, who knows if he'll even wrestle again, but there's just a lot of really strong people that are out. And I just can't imagine how good this show is going to be, or these shows are going to be when, you know, four of those six get back, or, you know, it's just going to be a lot more fun. So thank you guys. And always enjoyable to listen to, and I'll keep listening.
Sounds good. Are you like right next to that cricket?
Yes, I am. I'm outside. Yes, I'm right next to a cricket. Exactly. Awesome. It seems like it's right next to me. I don't know where the hell it is,
like,
but I can't believe you hear
like
that.
It sounds like it's on your phone. Yeah, that's great.
No, it's pretty damn far away. I guess I got a strong phone here, man. But thank you, and Javier and Wade. You guys are the best.
Thanks, Fred. World famous cricket live. Across the internet, the most famous cricket in the world right now is that one. Can I say that with confidence? Like, what else would make a cricket famous? I mean, I'm not.
They just started streaming Pinocchio.
But that's not a live cricket right now.
Oh, okay. All right, live cricket.
I'm talking about I'm not talking about Jiminy Cricket. I'm saying an actual cricket in nature at this moment. Under what circumstances, Javier, would there be a cricket right now that's more famous than that one in the wild?
World leader eating a chocolate-covered cricket and chokes on it.
happening. That's my point.
Well, I mean,
that's
we don't know. You don't know at the moment.
But
maybe
that's
it
the
is.
Point. But we would hear about that. We would hear about that, and that would – right. I am confident that today, whether it's today or tomorrow, we'll just say today, Monday – that is the most famous cricket in the world because it made it made its presence so well known on a live podcast heard by as many people as listen to this show,
I would agree with you on under those specifications.
Yeah. All right. So from there, we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, thanks for rolling. What's in your mind tonight about Raw?
My first question is on Austin Theory. Do you think he could do the Ken Kennedy gimmick and actually lose the briefcase to a baby face? I know Ken Kennedy lost it to Edge, who was a heel, but could they do it reverse on him?
What do you think, Javier? Ryan always throws me off. He's got original questions.
I don't like the idea of him losing the briefcase. He's in a weird position because with Roman having both titles, I think the best case scenario for everything is Cody Rhodes beats Roman Reigns, and then as he celebrates finally getting his, you know, the title that his, eluded his father, which was his story, then in comes Austin Theory and then wins it off of him, just to, you know, so he only holds it for like a brief moment, and then you start a feud between those two. If everything's basically, you know, I'm assuming, and this is obviously assuming that everyone is in a really good position at that point for this to work. You know, that's given that idea. I mean, that's like that, and that is your best case scenario. So I really don't know. I mean, cause like, I know Tom Martin said that he should just challenge for the title and lose, but you know, it's Roman Reigns. I don't know, you know, what the appeal of that is. It's kind of like a given that he's going to lose to Roman Reigns if he just challenges and loses. You know, and yeah, so it's a weird situation. I think it's almost most likely what ends up happening. I just don't like the idea.
Yeah. No, I'm for money. Whoever wins Money in the Bank, is the one who cashes them in. I don't want it to be at stake. I'm glad that changed with New Japan this year, Javier. Just hold on to it and cash it in. It's not a prize to be traded or put up. I mean, there's maybe a perfect circumstance at some point where it would make sense. But yeah, it's there, it's present, and it's just sort of hovering there. And I like what they've done with Theory so far. And I mean, they're so high on him, they're not going to put him in a situation that defines him down as either too stupid or too hapless. But he'll probably be somewhat stupid and hapless in terms of how it ends up playing out, but not egregiously so in a way that just defines him down as a fool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see a babyface. A babyface is more likely to put it up, like, in a wager to get something that he wants. Otis did, and, you know, not great, but it he's a babyface. A heel doing that, though, like, I'm going to put this up because I want revenge on somebody, that's not a heel.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Ryan, what else?
Hey, question on this Fight Pit match. Do you see there being a special guest referee? I know Ken Shamrock is lobbying to be the referee, and I know Kurt Angle has been the referee in the past in this match. I don't know if any of those two are candidates to make a surprise appearance at the Extreme Rules event.
Javier.
I think they probably would have already set up something where by now that, because I don't think they're just going to do a surprise. They would like introduce it, but, you know, so I think we already had run into an angle where they would have already been something that would have hinted at them having to resolve issues, and then they would have introduced the a special guest referee on the next Raw would be my guess. I don't think so.
What was the fan sign on Shamrock tonight? There was a fan sign. I think it was behind the announcers, but there was so much stuff at ringside. It might have been somewhere else.
I picked up on that. I didn't go back and watch it.
Was it?
I thought it was something like, you know, Ken Shamrock wrestled here or something. I don't know.
Maybe there was more than one. I think it was Ken Shamrock has heart, but it was I just got a glimpse of it.
Yeah. Because I thought it was like Ken Shamrock and Bret Hart, I think, is something. I thought it was referenced to Bret Hart. So I was wondering if it was something along those lines. I don't remember if they wrestled. I don't know if that was a venue that they wrestled at, or if they both wrestled at venue at some point.
If Javier is listening, let us email us and let us know later, Javier, if you're listening.
Hate you so much.
It's so funny how that runs through my head when I get stumped or lost. I'm like, Javier will research this while we continue taking calls.
Stop doing that.
No, it's good. It's just funny. Just funny how you can see the position we're in here doing the live show. We can't just pause the world and research, but it's nice to have you doing that. I miss it. Ryan, back to you for safely assume you got a third topic.
Yeah, third topic is on that major announcement they made during commercial saying that DX would be making an appearance in 2 weeks. Do you see WWE working with AEW and getting Billy Gunn on the show somehow, since I know they've done taped, you know, appearances before, but never a live appearance before.
Javier?
I'm sorry, I missed that. I'm too busy looking for
No.
they have wrestled before, but and the only time they wrestled in Canada was the stadium during the stadium in your house stadium. In your house, 16 Canadians stampede, but that was in Calgary, Alberta. So,
yeah, they're treating Canada like one big place right now. Like, you know, people from Toronto and Edmonton. It's like, yeah. I'm sorry, Ryan. Go ahead and clarify for Javier's question.
Okay, basically, my question was on Billy Gunn, if he could possibly make an appearance on this DX reunion, since they've done, you know, pre-tapes with AEW stars. In the past, but this would be a major step up from doing just pre-tapes with these legends.
I doubt it because Tony Khan's tweeted out a while ago that when they counterbooked what was the NXT show against All Out, I think it was.
Yeah, I don't think Ryan it's gonna. It'd be a like there was a thing with Christian and, you know, TNA and WWE. I don't think things are at a point where that's going to happen with AEW and WWE. It's a good question. It's worth asking about. I mean, in a weird way, it'd be sort of this nice gesture, but I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what the Reseda, like, what do you make of the Reseda comments from Graves?
Yeah, that was weird, because that particularly since I think Jimmy pushed back on that too, and then Graves struck back. Yeah. I mean, you know what? Now that I think about it, it could have been just like a kind of like a dig, you know, idiots from Reseda. So yeah,
I know. Yeah,
that sounds like it could have easily been a dig towards that. And then Jimmy, who kind of, I don't know, it felt like to you, like it did to me, kind of felt like he had an off night.
Ryan, what else?
Okay. Well, I do want to make a correction on something Javier said. I believe Otis lost his Money in the Bank in court because he didn't have the proper legal counsel. Not that he really was that stupid in losing it.
Yeah,
but it was the Miz, right?
Yeah.
It's just more adding a detail than a correction, probably.
it was the Miz. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that, because I forgot how stupid that was.
yes. I mean, WWE has a history of that, but again, it's sort of a fresh start with Paul Levesque in the sense too. I mean, I don't think past this prologue with a lot of things like that. All right, cool. Ryan, appreciate it as always.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing, yeah. All right, wow, I haven't been staring at the clock or looking at the clock. I didn't. We have gone long. We'll zip through a couple emails and wrap up. David C. from Hamburg, PA, now in Pompano Beach, Florida. Says, did either of you notice that in the graphic talking about Seth Rollins cashing in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania, the graphic said it was the height of the century as opposed to the heist of the century? No. Typos happen. I'm not picking on anybody for that. That'd be hypocritical. And quick second question, why haven't they taken the freaking out of his name yet? And do you think they eventually will? Thanks for reading my email and go VIP. And P.S. I know we're supposed to get too bad of weather down this way, but stay safe just in case, Javier. Javier, yeah, your thoughts.
They kind of – I could have sworn they got rid of the freaking for a little bit, and then it came back like with extra gusto. So
yes.
I think it's going to be here for quite a bit. Was there another part to that?
Oh, just the typo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I read a headline, Wade, that I just wanted to, like, shoot myself. Not shoot myself. I wanted to whoever the hell allowed that headline to come out. First off, they used the wrong it's. They used, you know, supposed to use ITS, yeah. And they used apostrophe S. And yeah. Then instead of saying into, they said in. So, like, the entire, like, headline, like, made no sense. And I'm like,
yeah.
And there was, a correction in the article later, and they still left the same headline. I'm like.
Yeah, well, all right. JB from Detroit says, much like I feel AW has an over-reliance on blood and stipulation matches, I'm starting to feel like Paul Levesque's booking is showing an over-reliance on table spots. You picking up on that, Javier? I mean, it is extreme rules season. But I guess he's talking about the announce desk. You know, because AW just pulled up folding tables.
The announce desk seems like it's broken down once every night, and I think Corey Graves might have been hinting at that when Almost put the bodies on the and he's like, we just went to the desk already once, we just put together this thing. So it kind of felt like he was frustrated with that, and it almost feels like it's also done on purpose to razz the announcers too. So
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why it's got that feel to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Does bringing Braun Strowman back take away, that's something else one of our callers brought up, but that was going to come in. Does bringing Braun back take away from the one in a million giant-like aura of Omos and vice versa? So I was telling my son this watching Raw tonight. He poked his head in to watch WWE TV, which is a rare thing for him these days since the Fiend went away. He's very casual fan, but he's like, I think Omos and Braun Strowman are going to fight. Like that was one of his observations in watching Raw tonight. And so I think it's more that they're headed for battle than it is one taking away from the other. And Omos is the tall giant, and Braun is, you know, he's tall, but he's fast, if you haven't heard Javier, but he's also just, you know, thick and muscular and powerful. So I think they're different enough. I don't think that it competes. And one of our colleagues brought up if Braun feels like he just never went away. And I don't think so. That said, if what he means by that is he's just in the same spot he was in and the novelty is gone, yeah. I mean, I think there's something to that. I don't feel like, oh, he never went away, but I feel he went away and then came back and he's in the same spot he was before he left. And that's, and I think that hurts the ability to then cash in the novelty of him being back for something significant soon or later.
Yeah, I mean, one of the novelties of him being back, though, is that he, you know, the opportunity for him to go against, you know, big guys, and they kind of already blew it with, you know, not blew it like in a bad way, but like they already blew their wad with Otis, and now it looks like they're going up to Omos, because the call by Strowman was right before the Omos match. And they were talking about it on commentary. MVP got upset. And then later on, after the squash happened, they mentioned Strowman again, linking Strowman with Omos. So I believe that's what they're going to be – what they're setting up next.
Yeah. What is Braun's true upside had they brought him back? Had you been told they're bringing him back, but nothing happened yet? Does him going away for a while allow him to be repackaged and elevated into kind of a top-tier guy, or is Braun? And let's just accept that he's going to be in the role that he's in, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I would have just used him more as a special attraction, and not, like, all the time. And maybe that's that might be what they're going to ultimately do, but, you could essentially build him up to be, like, you know, kind of like a Brock Lesnar light. I mean, Brock Lesnar obviously has a history, but, you know, Strowman has the physique and stuff. I don't think he's someone that you should be seeing every week or twice a week, you know, with the, you know, when everything's with how things are going now. Cause I think that does rob of the mystique. And if you, I mean, put him in dark matches because, you know, obviously it'll be pleasing for the fans, and just put him in the dark matches destroying somebody, and that's pretty much how I would do it, and just use them for, like, you know, like when you need, because I mean, he would be a credible opponent for Reigns, for example. That would be another person that you could put on there just because of his sheer size and who he is.
I wasn't super high on, by any means, on bringing him back and signing him. I think we saw some limitations, but to bring him back to just go back to doing what he was doing already does feel like you're losing a chance in some of the things. Like, sometimes you bring someone back, and it's like, I feel that way with, like, in AEW, when somebody shows up, like, treat them like a bigger deal than you plan to treat them 3 months from now. But the novelty of them showing up, like, you know, whether it's Ruby Soho or Samoa Joe or whoever, like, if you bring someone in, almost overpush them and take advantage of the novelty of them being there, the excitement of it, and the new setting and the new opponents. And before they reveal themselves to belong at a lower water level, or they're just at a different point in their career. And with Braun, it feels like strategically, it just wasn't a great time to bring him in if this is the role that he's going to be in. Because he's not really an impact player, but it's hard to just have him I shouldn't say it's hard to be a novelty act, but I'm just not sure it's worth it to bring him back to be just sort of upper mid-card novelty. And I don't get the sense Triple H is, like, infatuated with Omos against Braun. It's like making it all worth it in the end. So, I mean, we'll see it play out a little bit.
He's someone who should have come in with a plan already in place for him to do something. He shouldn't have just come in and, like, hey, let's just throw him on TV. And he should have been already, like, he's going to go up against Lashley. He's going to go up against Reigns. One of the two.
Yeah. And finally, JB says, much like AEW's accused of introducing wrestlers cold, I felt like WWE was guilty of that with Candice LeRae. I think that affected her pop. It didn't seem to be too big at all. So, again, we talked about that earlier. I think it's fair to say, was she someone who deserved or should have had, you know, vignettes or an introductory interview? as opposed to, oh my God, can you believe it's her? And so I get the AEW comparison, but I feel like it didn't go from. I think the difference is the announcer said she's a big deal and here's why, as opposed to AEW, he or she's a big deal because you should know already, and if you don't, you're really not in the club.
Yeah, and I think also because Gargano got a pretty good pop when he debuted.
Yeah.
That they thought since they were, you know, and that was in Canada, and I think they were expecting the same kind of fans that would like already know who she is. And maybe they were, but I wrote several times in my notes that, wow, the crowd seems more dead for this than I thought they would be. And then they got up. It almost feels like they blew their wad like early on, like in the first hour. And then like from that point on, it kind of felt like, you know, like the, I forgot what match it was, Styles and Zayn, like I'm watching that and like the crowd's like sitting on their hands, and it was not until like the match really got going that they started, you know, getting into it for like the spots. But there were like parts on the show where like the crowd seemed like completely dead.
Yeah. All right. Javier, is there anything else in your notes?
We didn't really talk about Dexter Lumis, murdering Miz.
Did a little bit. Somebody brought it up and said it's kind of creepy, but amusing. And I'm kind of in that category. How about you?
Yeah, this one, I mean, I like the way that it's going throughout the entire episode as people are, like, walking by and seeing, like, the dead security guards. I do like what they're doing. This one, like, you know, him actually getting, like, that physically violent with Miz, that it crossed the line into being a little bit more disturbing than, you know, fun. I'm still interested in where it's going, but yeah, this was like a little bit more on the creepy side than the fun side.
I mean, yeah. Just sort of caressing and petting his head is going to make some people like have weird dreams. It is if you just turn on, you know, WWE Raw, you're like, oh, it would be great if there was a commercial break or it was halftime, like right at that moment, Monday Night Football, and be like, yeah, well, let's see what's going on in USA Network. What? What is going on here for someone who hasn't been watching and doesn't know the history of Dexter Lumis? Trying to think if there's anything else in my notes. I think Ray continues to do a good job in this role as a dad who is saying what dads would say about their son, and Graves is saying what someone like Corey Graves would say, which is, hey, you got to understand your kids are going to leave the nest, deal with it.
You mentioned it, and I have to say that. Like, I love Todd, but, like, I don't know if it's just a Hispanic culture thing, but I don't think you're considered a man unless you had to go at your dad. So it's, you know, sons and fathers fight physically, and it kind of made sense, and it wasn't like, you know – And he kind of mentioned that, you know, they're fighting over, you know, he didn't get credit for a match. I'm like, no, we've been talking about this for over a year, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
About like, is this the moment? Is this the moment? Oh, is he going to turn now? Is he going to turn now? Because, you know, they've been doing stuff that rubs him the wrong way. We've been seeing this build up for a while.
I know.
So it's like, it, you know, maybe I'm living vicariously or like, you know, not vicariously, but like having, like, you know, memories brought up to the surface that I should be dealing with a therapist, but, you know, and not in a wrestling program. I mean, it's I like the story. I don't necessarily like the packaging altogether. Like, you know, Judgment Day is a weak team, a weak group. Dominic has been wobbly. You know, strong sometimes, not so strong other times. And, you know, Ray has been mostly good, but, you know, but overall the story itself is solid.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, we will end there. Let me make sure no one else called up. Yeah. Nobody else called in.
I DM'd you the headline, and I mean, I don't know if you want to react to it online.
Let's see. I mean, it is greatest enemy. Caveman. It's a caveman contraction. It is greatest enemy. That's what it's greatest enemy.
But it's like how blank has turned in blank. It is greatest enemy. It is supposed to be into.
No,
it's just like it. I was just like flabbergasted at that.
No, it's rough. It's rough. I agree. All right. Thanks, Javier. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thanks, of course, to all of our listeners. Send questions in or any follow-up to anything we said here for the flagship tomorrow with Zach Haydorn over on the Blue Logo Show. Search Wade Keller to subscribe to both, or, of course, go to pwtorch.com for links to all of our shows, too. Javier, actually, tell people about how they can hear and read more from you. What do you do for the Torch?
Well, I do the primers for the pay-per-views for AEW and WWE, and I finally caught up with Victory Road this weekend, so I'm caught up to Impact. Let's see if that remains that way until Bound for Glory.
Yeah.
And do New Japan Pride podcast mainly around the big tournaments and big shows. Taking a break right now because the G1 just happened, so I covered every single night of G1. So you can check that out if you haven't had if you ever go back and watch the G1. And then I've got next up is catching up on New Japan. So I don't know.
Yeah.
So much wrestling.
Yeah.
Oh, and as part of sorry for making this longer, but as part of doing the catching up on Impact, I also saw the Ric Flair. Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk tomorrow on the flagship about that, I suspect. Yeah. Cool. Javier, as always, real pleasure. Thanks for joining me.
Have a good night.
You bet.